to Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the closing market report for the 20th day of May 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. We'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hear about the cash grain market from the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana. And along the way, get an update of the agricultural news from your director of ag programming, Dave Dickey. And it all happens on this Wednesday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. Don't forget to find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. We are public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Checking the numbers as they finished up in Chicago now. In futures, July contract for the soft red winter wheat at $5.13, up 2¾. The hard red July up a nickel at $5.45. Corn futures were down 2 cents in the lead option July at $3.60. September at $3.66¾, 2½ lower. December down 3 at $3.77¼. And the March contract at $3.88, down 2¾ for the day. The May futures of next year, 395, 3¼ lower. July at 401, down 3¼ as well. July soybeans on the afternoon at 941¼. Settlement price down 5 cents. August at 931¾, 6¼ lower. September at 930¾, down 5¼. And November beans, $9.19¾, down 3¾. January at 927, down 3½ cents. Bean meal at 304.50, 260 lower. The bean oil at 32.20. That's up 2 cents on the afternoon. Live cattle futures, June contract 151.35, down 62½ cents on the settlement. August at 149.72½, down 87½. And feeder cattle for the day finished the May contract up 37½ cents at 219.72½, and the August at 216.70, down 45 cents. Lean hogs $82.55, up 40 in the lead option June. July at $83.35 per 100 pounds, $1.17½ lower. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil is trading at $58.92 a barrel. It's up 93 cents. The Arbobber wholesale price of gasoline at $2.03¾, 4¾ higher. Natural gas at $2.93¼, down $0.01¾. Diesel fuel at $1.94¼ is $0.04 higher. And the gold futures at $1,208.70 finished up $2. The U.S. dollar at 95.43. That's up 0.173 on the afternoon. The weather forecast says we'll see some showers this afternoon. It'll be cloudy with a high of just 54 degrees on a northeast wind at 11 miles an hour, will gusting all the way to 15. Chance of precipitation in the area set at 70% for the afternoon. That'll drop to 40% for the evening, mainly before 9 this evening, mostly cloudy and a low of 42. Sunny tomorrow and 66 on a north-northwest wind at 8 to 11. Mostly clear with a low of 46 on Tuesday night and a low of 8 miles an hour. Sunny with a high of 72 on Thursday, and we'll go to a low of 51. And that's a look at the weather forecast. We'll take a more complete look at that as we get to the end of this half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Remember, you can always hear our weather forecast. I think this is one of the best parts of our program because there are really good information that comes to you across all of the world. And we have four or five different meteorologists. It's all at willag.org, willag.org. Well, it is the 20th day of May, a Wednesday afternoon. On the line with us is Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County to take up the agricultural trade in Chicago. Thanks, Jackie, for taking the time with us today. We do appreciate that.
Well, thank you, Todd. Glad to be here.
Now, a couple of things we probably should make note of. The markets are closed next Monday, that for Memorial Day. Will we have a regular trade day on Friday?
Yes, we have a totally regular trade day. There's no early close at all, and the only big impact it'll have is inspections and crop progress are going to be delayed until Tuesday. You know, they normally come out on Monday at 10 and then after the market, so we won't get those till Tuesday, but regular day on Friday.
You know, speaking of the crop progress, one of the things I've made note of out of Iowa for the last several crop progress reports is that they do give us, and normally they will give us a livestock update of some sort, but they pay some attention to avian flu. It's been a big deal both in Minnesota and Iowa. Turkeys in Minnesota, chickens in Iowa. I'm wondering how much do we know about the impact there as it might relate to local basis, available supply, those sorts of things?
Well, you know, when you look at the bigger picture, I listened to somebody who is considered to be an expert out of Minnesota State last week on it, and it cleared a lot of things up, okay? Originally, we thought that they were going to have to be without birds for 6 months. It's income loss that will happen for approximately 6 months. They figure the birds can be put back in about maybe 2.5 to 3 months after they get rid of them, compost them, sterilize everything. You know, the bigger question is going to be is will they be willing to go back in and restock them and take a chance on getting it again? That's the wild card. And today we just saw the first operations that actually were hit by the avian bird flu have released some of their feedstock, some of their corn and their meal back. You know, they're putting it back out on the marketplace. And so, you know, that's the biggest risk that we run, you know. Birds eat a lot. There's just no two ways about that. And so I think what we're going to see, the Turkey Association came out today and said they don't think the USDA is right at all on growth because of how hard Minnesota and Wisconsin were hit. So, you know, this may be a slow goer in terms of seeing the actual impact, but I'm certain USDA is going to be weighing it when they're looking at feed use numbers, maybe not on the next report, but on the report after that.
Yeah, so the next report would be prior to the June 30 grain stocks report, but after that they'll have a better handle maybe on what's left, I suppose, in the bins, and kind of be able to have a better judge of how much is not being consumed by the birds that have been eradicated in those areas.
Yeah.
How do we know that they've begun to let some of that meal and corn back into the marketplace?
So some of the elevators that they buy from are saying it, you know, so that's just been the word that's been out on the street today, that's what's happening out in the countryside. I talked to somebody in Iowa myself, actually, who said they know what's happening, you know, and so I think they probably know it in terms of it might not be so much as they're putting back on the market. What they're just saying is we don't need any more, you know, we are taking less. And so you can interpret it one way or the other. The end result is the same. You know, we have more grain than we had before.
Right. So when you put that back into the marketplace, and I was just looking at the November and actually July soybean charts, there's some pretty wicked-looking little lows sitting
Ooh,
in those charts.
Boy, oh, yeah, you certainly have that right. I mean, you know, when you look at the November, we put in another new contract low today after putting in one yesterday with a new contract low close yesterday as well as a new contract low close today. So I think what we're seeing happen here is, you know, and we have an Argentinian strike going on, which is, like, amazing. But I think there's a lot of concern in the trade that we're going to have a lot more corn acres coming out because of the rain that we've been seeing out in the West. And everywhere, you know, we still have, it'll depend. Things might change, or the attitude might change a little bit after Monday's report or Tuesday's report now, and see how far we actually got anything done this week. You know, there's been a lot of widespread rain. And so, in general, I think that, and you add on the fact that we saw Argentina's crop getting bigger. We fear that we might actually see the same thing down in South America. And, you know, those are just not great things. We did get one boot or one kick, and that was that China bought some old crop beans yesterday, which was good because China hasn't been buying from us. But I've got to ask myself, could this be due to the Argentinian strike? Remember how we doubled up on meal when we had a hard time getting it?
Sure.
And it got canceled. I mean, you know, I think the same type of thing could happen there. But the weather is definitely a major, major driver in this particular market right now.
And that's because we've had, and while it's really cool today, just, 51 degrees outside our studios here, I walked across campus today, and while I have a windbreaker with me, boy, it was cold coming across there, at least it felt like that. We've had periodic warm spells, and I guess the weather guys are saying they think that heat's going to stay with us higher than normal, but we're getting rainfall along with it, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, they're talking above normal temperatures as well as above normal rain. And so, you know, for anybody who's got their planting done, they're not going to cry very much about it. The biggest concern at the moment, and we've seen the wheat market being just wild on short covering, is what's the impact going to be on the wheat? And, you know, a lot of people are saying, yay, wheat's going to go up. It's going to pull corn along. Well, you've noticed corn hasn't done much. And I think it's because there's a big concern. What happens if we end up with a lot of excess feed wheat? It becomes suddenly a competitor for corn. And so, you know, we'll have to evaluate and see once what actually happens. When you look at the overall weather, Todd, I picked up a pretty interesting tidbit, I thought. Last year at this time, in the states where 31.3% of the beef herds were located, they had a pasture rating of 40% poor to very poor. This same area this year is at 8%. And last year, in states where 40% of the beef herds were located, they had pasture ratings of 40% good to excellent. This year, it's 86.6%. I always watch pasture ratings because it really does give you a real good feel for, you know, what's going on across the whole U.S. And I just thought this was extremely interesting and a really good statement as to how much improvement we've seen in the moisture levels, at least in the topsoil moisture levels, especially in the West.
As we wrap up our time together, why don't you look to some of the outside areas outside the United States, and because those tend to have a pretty good influence. Greece is still in the news, for instance.
Oh, yes. I'm telling you, Greece, you know, they tell us Greece isn't good for any of us. It's not good for Europe either, believe me. You know, they're looking for more quantitative easing news coming out. There's a really big, huge fear that Greece is not going to make its June IMF payment because they still have no agreement on how they're going to do this. Germany is saying there are absolutely no assurances that Greece isn't going to default. And then you've got the country of Greece where the anti-austerity people are going crazy and saying, we want a new election because we want a guy who's going to do what we want. In other words, we don't want to pay. Here in the U.S., we had the FOMC notes released this morning. It looks as though part of the Fed is feeling pretty good. Part of the Fed is really concerned about the strong dollar. Doesn't look as if, you know, there's going to be a big move. But the bigger one will be this afternoon because Chicago Fed President Chris Evans is going to come out. And he's actually a voting member. You know, he's long held that he doesn't think they should raise interest rates in 15. And we'll see once what he's still saying. You know, world economy, we got ECB, European Central Bank notes coming out tomorrow before the Dow opens. So this could be a wild ride. Everybody's going to be looking, is China going to slow down? You know, and our economy, one of the final things, you know, I think that's so interesting, Todd, is truck drivers. The supply chain management report came out yesterday. They said we're 40,000 to 50,000 short on truck drivers in the United States, and they're only adding 25,000 annually. Today, right now, today, they said hundreds of loads daily are being turned away due to a lack of drivers. So that's an economic situation for us, too.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk more about the regular marketplace and, of course, the agricultural commodities in the future. I appreciate it.
You betcha, Todd. Thank you. Have a great day.
You're so welcome. That, of course, is Jackie Vake. She's at Stewart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Now here's Dave Dickey with today's Ag News.
In agricultural news, the White House yesterday threatened to veto the Fast Track Trade Authority bill if it contains legislation with binding punishments for currency manipulation. Treasury Secretary Jacob Lew called the bipartisan currency measure a poison pill that could sink the proposed 12-nation Trans-Pacific Partnership Pact. The bill could go to a full Senate vote later this week. Canada is preparing to slap retaliatory tariffs on some U.S. imports unless Washington ends a meat labeling law that the World Trade Organization on Monday deemed discriminatory. The tariffs on U.S. imports would help to offset Canadian losses related to the U.S.'s country of origin labeling law. Canada contends that the rules cost the Canadian livestock industry as much as $2.5 billion a year. USDA officials say that number may be a little bit high. Conagra Foods is likely to face a criminal charge now that the U.S. government has completed its investigation of the company's 2007 peanut butter recall. Prosecutors are unveiling details of the investigation today. ConAgra recalled all of its peanut butter in 2007 after its Peter Pan and Great Value peanut butter was linked to a salmonella outbreak that sickened at least 625 people in 47 states. ConAgra officials blamed moisture in the production plant for helping salmonella bacteria grow on the raw peanut. The House passed a measure yesterday to allow states to continue receiving highway and transit aid for another 2 months, the 12th such temporary patch in 6 years, and a reflection of lawmakers' lack of consensus on how to solve the nation's infrastructure financing woes. The fund relies on revenue from the 18.4 cents a gallon federal gasoline tax, but the money it brings is not enough to cover transportation spending. The White House has released its long-awaited strategy and research action plan to promote the health of honeybees and other pollinators. The pollinator strategy comes with the goal of reducing honeybee colony losses during winter to no more than 15% within 10 years, as well as restoring or enhancing 7 million acres of land for pollinators over the next 5 years. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You know, twice a year, USDA tries to officially predict how many acres of corn and soybeans U.S. farmers will plant. We'll have more in a moment on how the anticipated changes this year, as we move from the March Prospective Planting Survey to the June Acreage Report, are working out. Well, a pretty good start to the growing season. In the middle part of the country has commodity traders thinking more and more about the number of acres farmers have planted, especially the corn and soybeans. The undercurrent of this collective thought process clearly points to more soybean acres and fewer corn acres. USDA will update the March pre-planting season survey of farmers with more concrete numbers the last day of June. Back in March, farmers, with a little USDA data adjustment, said they would sow about 84.6 million acres of soybeans and 89.2 million of corn. University of Illinois ag economist Darrell Good took a look at the recent historical data, going back to 1996, to see just how acreage usually changes from March to June.
In the 19 years since 1996, the final estimate of corn planted acreage exceeded the March intentions in 7 years and was less than intentions in 12 years. The direction of the change was correctly signaled by the June estimate in 13 years, but incorrectly signaled in 6 years. The final estimate of planted acres of corn exceeded the June acreage estimate in only 5 years. In the other 14 years, the final estimate was below the June estimate.
In those same 19 years, the final estimate of soybean planted acreage exceeded the estimate of March planting intentions in 10 years. Acreage was less than intentions in 9 years. The direction of the change from March intentions to final acreage estimates was correctly signaled by the June estimate in 16 years and incorrectly signaled in 3 of those years. That is, USDA's final crop acreage number published in the January crop production report followed the direction of the change up or down from March to June for both corn and soybeans in the majority of all the years. However, that's the whole of the historical account. Things have been a bit different as of late.
Recent history reveals a checkered pattern of changing corn and soybean acreage estimates from March intentions to the final estimate. Many of those changes may have been related to producer responses to changing prices and/or weather conditions. Not fully appreciated, however, is the role that sampling errors might play in the changes in acreage estimates through the cycle. There is a tendency to view the acreage estimates as precisely based on a census of producers. The USDA reports that sampling errors are typically between 1 and 3%. The size and direction of these errors through the acreage estimating cycle could explain some of the changes in estimates.
As for this year, Darrell Good writes in his online weekly outlook found on the FarmDoc daily website that there seems to be some consensus the June 30 USDA acreage report will show the combined acreage of corn and soybeans exceeds the March intentions, with slightly fewer corn acres and substantially more soybean acres. He says that logic seems to ignore the likelihood intentions reported in March should have already reflected CRP decisions, and close to zero prevent plant acres. So for the most part, an expected increase in acreage is based on the perception March intentions did not account for all the cropland acreage. As pointed out in the FarmDoc Daily article of April the 2nd, that conclusion should be tempered by recognizing the sampling variability inherent in acreage estimates. Even so, an increase of 1 to 3 million acres in the estimate of planted acres of principal crops, mostly soybeans, says Daryl Good, that would not be a surprise. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always listen to our program on demand anytime you'd like on our website. The address there, WILLAG.org. Let's check now the cash grain market. Alex Reed is on the phone line. He's at the Andersons from the Clymers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana. That's the ethanol plant. Thanks so much, Alex, for being with us. It's a pretty cool day. It's been wet, but maybe dry enough in your area, I think, for farmers to have moved a little bit. Rainfall's headed your way eventually, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've had quite a bit of rain here recently. It looks like more rain possible today. It's been cold, been wet. A lot of guys got a lot of stuff done. A lot of progress was made, but you know, since it is wet out in the fields, guys have been moving some more corn as well.
Oh, have they? So is that based on basis or just based on need?
You know, it's based on time. Guys have a lot of old crop on the farm, and they took advantage of basis being strong here recently, which really got some stuff moving. But if, you know, when the weather gets bad and things are wet, and they have time to get stuff moving to town, they take advantage of it. But mostly because of the weather, but also because of basis.
Did the influx widen your basis out?
It has, actually. We did back down a couple cents here earlier this week. Everybody in general in our area has been pretty firm to slightly weaker on basis, just, you know, with that influx, like you said.
And how close are you to getting soybeans planted and done?
Maybe, I mean, it's taken a hit. It's kind of fallen behind a little bit, but, you know, we need a few good days for guys to get out in the field and get finished. I think a good 3 days, and we can have quite a bit done.
Spot month bids.
Right now, for corn, we are $3.62, and beans, we are $9.50.
Thanks so much, Alex.
Thanks, Todd.
Alex Reed is from the Andersons Clymers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana. Back in 2 minutes.
It's National Quiche Lorraine Day. On this day in agricultural history, in 1862, President Abraham Lincoln signed the Homestead Act into law. It opened millions of acres of western land to settlers. The law allowed applicants freehold title to 160 acres of undeveloped land outside of the original 13 colonies. The new law required 3 steps, the filing of an application, improvement of the land, and filing for deed of title. Eventually, 1.6 million homesteads were granted, the last to Kenneth Deerdorf for a claim in Alaska in 1988. In 1874, jeans with copper rivets are patented by Levi Strauss and Jacob Davis. For nearly 20 years, Levi Strauss & Company was the only company making riveted clothing until the patent expired around 1891. Thereafter, dozens of garment manufacturers began to imitate the original riveted clothing. In 1875, the International Bureau of Weights and Measures was created. In 1884, El Blue patented a hand corn sheller. And in 2005, Governor Jeb Bush signed a law making the orange the official state fruit of Florida. The orange blossom and orange juice were previously declared the official state flower and official state beverage. And that's this day in agricultural history.
It's a Wednesday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 20th day of May. I'm Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City to take a look at the growing region's weather forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and mostly the Northern Hemisphere. Thanks so much for being with us today. It's really cool here, and it looks like we're going to get some rain later this afternoon in my part of the world. Tell me about it and where it's been and how much it will drop.
Yeah, this is part of a storm system that began in hard red winter wheat country yesterday and last night. Pretty impressive storm, actually, for those areas from north central parts of Texas through the heart of Kansas and into southwestern Nebraska. Some of those areas saw 1 to 2 inch rains. There was even 3 to 4 inches reported in southern Oklahoma and north central parts of Texas, right in the heart of some of the wettest areas in hard red winter wheat country. Not a good thing for them. But the showers and thunderstorms at this hour are moving across the Mississippi River very slowly. We're going to find it continuing to advance eastward into the Midwest. But the good news for those who still want to get some field work done in the eastern Midwest is that the system is going to fall apart as it moves further to the east. Rain totals on the east side of the Mississippi are not likely to be anywhere near close to what occurred in hard red winter wheat country last night. So we'll see some disruption to field work as we go forward through this next couple of days as this line of showers and thunderstorms works its way eastward. But as far as meaningful delays, I don't think it's going to be that case. So we'll see some disruption last several-hour period and maybe a half day for a couple of spots. But the further east the rain goes, the more insignificant it'll be. So Ohio, eastern Kentucky, parts of Michigan will probably get by without a lot of moisture on this event.
When will we return to warmer temperatures?
Warmer temperatures will probably start to evolve as we get into the weekend and ahead of another round of rain, unfortunately. So it'll be a narrow period of rising temperatures. We'll see that take place late Friday afternoon, more likely though Saturday and Sunday. But as we move through the weekend, the risk of rain and thunderstorms will be rising once again in the western Corn Belt in particular. For areas east of the Mississippi River, we'll probably see that come to fruition sometime on Sunday going into Monday, and we'll probably see the shower and thunderstorm activity hang with us through a big part of midweek next week. There is, unfortunately, another shot of cool air that will be pushing through the Midwest in the latter half of next week, maybe as early as Wednesday, but we'll likely see the finish to next week's weather rather chilly as well.
A couple of notes. Maybe we better talk about Indianapolis on Sunday, weather forecast there for the 500, if you can, and then on Monday for Memorial Day.
All right. Well, Sunday, I think for Indianapolis, not a bad day, although we will see some increased cloudiness and at least a risk of some shower activity. I think most of the precipitation will hold off until Saturday evening or even Sunday morning. On Monday, the outlook looks pretty showery across many areas in the Midwest, actually Sunday into Monday. Sunday, we'll likely see the precipitation from Iowa, Missouri into parts of Illinois. We'll see that precipitation working its way further east as we go into Monday. So Ohio, parts of Michigan, and Indiana will likely see scattered showers and storms all the way through a big part of the day on Monday.
Thanks so much for taking the time with us, Drew.
You bet. Have a good week.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Helps us wrap up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. You can find us online at WILLAG.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.